Welcome to Aging Gayfully. We're about adventure, leisure, travel, being a citizen of the world, traveling to destinations, and being a part of the global community as we age and prosper in body, mind, and spirit.
Welcome to Aging Gayfully. I'm Josh.
And I'm Chris. Well, Christopher, just depends what day of the week it is.
Does it? Now, what days are more suited to Chris and what days are more suited to Christopher?
I guess that's just who I'm talking to that day. And so, but I'm talking to a lot of people here today. So it could be Chris or Christopher or the bow tie guy. And now I have competition with another bow tie guy.
I am wearing a bow tie today in honor of you. Actually, I'm wearing it for three reasons. In honor of you, firstly. Secondly, is to restrict blood flow to my brain so that I can probably be a little bit more interesting talker and get out of my own way. And this is a psychological thing that we can delve into at another time. And the third thing is that as we go on in the recording, I want to be able to undo my bow tie and have it hanging like Jerry Lewis, you know, in the late hours of the telethon.
You know that? I remember that.
He'd be all like cigarette in hand.
And scotch and soda on the other hand.
Staggering around asking for the last bit of money, singing a song or two. That's going to be me. Cheers.
Cheers. Thinking about Jerry Lewis telethon, I wonder how many of our listeners out there actually even remember the Jerry Lewis telethon, because that's a whole generation ago, or a couple of generations ago.
Is it? Well, I remember it.
Yeah. Well, you're just showing your age. That's why.
Yes, I'm in our target demographic, which is a good thing.
Because you're aging gayfully.
Hopefully.
But you know, you don't have to be gay to age gayfully, but it does help.
Well, or have an amazing gay friend, which this is my on-ramp into aging gayfully right there.
And it's good to have allies.
There you go. So today, I'm very excited because we're going to start this podcast with a bang. We're going to start where I believe this whole idea germinated and started in your brain. We're going to start in Barcelona. Spotlight on Spain. Let's talk about Barcelona, baby. Did you know that Barcelona is one of the most LGBTQ-friendly cities in Europe? Madrid may have the largest gay community in Spain, but Barcelona, with its anti-homophobia law adopted in 2014, and vibrant LGBTQ club scene and festivals, is no doubt Europe's gay summer party hotspot. There are also nearly 3 million cruisers passing through the 7-terminal cruise port of Barcelona every year, making it the 6th busiest spot in the world and number one in Europe. Barcelona has the largest metropolitan park in the world, 22 times larger than Central Park in New York City, if you were wondering. Pablo Picasso, the famous Spanish artist, put his roots down in Barcelona. The artist who introduced Cubism to the world spent his developing years there and studied at the School of Fine Arts. If you're there, pop round to the Picasso Museum, which has over 3,500 of his artworks on display. Barcelona, it's a happening place.
Oh, my heart is in Barcelona, yes. And actually, you're spot on target, Josh. This concept all started in Barcelona and my love for Barcelona and what Barcelona and the people and the culture in Spain helped me move on. Move on is not the right word. Helped me through my grief process.
As you were going through that process, is that when you first became aware of Barcelona? Is that when you were bit by the bug or did it happen before then?
Well, it happened before then because I vividly remember the 1992 Summer Olympics that were in Barcelona. And I was captured. I've always watched the Olympics anyway, but the architecture and the history and you could just feel the comfort through the TV station. And of course, then, you know, being in the seminary like I was for 5-6 years, the rich history that I studied in school, that That's in Spain. I can't tell you how many times the history books, the church history, turn to Spain. And to see that on screen, it's like, I want to go there. Yeah. And I remember, my mom, who was a woman before her time. She had two college degrees in the 1930s, unheard of. And she always wanted to go to Europe. But she never was able to fulfill that dream because she started having tons and tons and tons of kids, like eight. And I set that goal there on, I remember, 1999, I'm going to go to Barcelona.
Yeah.
And I did in 2006 with Richard on a transatlantic cruise. When we got off that cruise, I thought, goodness gracious, St. Ignatius, here I am in Barcelona. And I haven't looked back since.
For those of you who, they hear 1992 Olympics, that's the Olympics that we sent our professional basketball players to the Olympics for the first time, the Dream Team.
I had forgotten about that. Maybe that's another reason why I was so in tune to it. Yeah.
All of this, so I was way into basketball then. And so I, of course, watched all of the coverage, and I became aware of Barcelona for the first time then as well. And everything that I saw looked pretty amazing, beautiful, lots of colors. That's what I remember about it. It's just lots of color.
And I love color. I'm okay wearing stripes and plaids at the same time.
So you go and you go on this cruise and you go to Barcelona for the first time. Give me a flavor of specific things that just grabbed you. Like a time where you stood in awe.
I think there's a landmark in Spain that, especially in Barcelona, that everybody recognizes and aware of. That's the La Sagrada Familia. Now, my Spanish still is not that that great, but this is one of Gaudi's architectural wonders of the world. This magnificent cathedral church, they've been building this for almost 100 years. And I think what's impressive, not only about the structure in and of itself, is that the commitment of the community to see this project through. And if my memory is correct, I probably should have looked this up before but I think it is scheduled to be finished in 2026.
Oh, wow.
And you think of a 100-year project that the community has stuck with, and that's kind of the spirit that I've learned of the community of Barcelona and Spain in general, is that while any community has their conflicts, there's this togetherness, this rich history of culture, the spirit of the community that is prevalent when you're walking the streets of Barcelona and you're seeing history in front of you. When you walk by a building and you think you see 1497, you think that's the address, but no, that's the year it was built.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of lose sight of that in the United States. We're relatively new. I'm grateful that I've had the opportunity to travel into Spain and Europe, but when you think about a building that started 100 years ago, and the community is still working on it. Think of all the people that have had their hands in that. To me, it's phenomenal.
It's funny because you had told me a story about you and your broken Spanish. Can you tell our listeners that story? Because to me, it also epitomizes just the general spirit of the place.
One of my early trips to Spain, I came down with a cold. And anybody that's been in Europe knows that the pharmacies are much different in Europe than they are in the United States. And you can it's not like walking into any of the any Walgreens or CVS or anything like that. It's like walking into those old neighborhood pharmacies that we all grew up with a kid, where you knew the pharmacist behind the counter. And you see those blinking green lights with the kind of the cross, and they're on every corner. But I walked in and was very self-conscious about not being able to communicate as well as I'd like to. And I made the facial expression of, you know, put my fingers over my nose, and, you know, I watery eyes. I did that. I cold my cold, and the pharmacist, she got exactly what the problem was. She came back with these kind of like Alka-Seltzer, but as I was walking out the door, she said, "Thank you very much." It reminded me, as I was self-conscious about respecting their language, most people, especially in stores and restaurants and in major cities, you know, English is spoken. But if you at least give it a try, that indicates that, you know, you're conscious of the culture and you're trying your best. And you just explain, and that's what I've come to do now. I just, PK Espanol, and I put my hand up, and they smile, and I had a waitress one day. She told her I was taking a course. I'm trying to learn. So she asked me a question in Spanish. Did I want hot water or cold water? And I knew she was talking about agua, but that's the spirit of the people in Spain.
Now we've talked about how Barcelona has a vibrant LGBT-friendly space. They just live in this wonderful space of acceptance.
Right.
How did you find that out? How did you experience that?
I have never felt unwelcomed in Spain.
Surely that is so significantly different than here in the United States. I mean, that had to be a novel experience for you.
Well, and I recall in one of our group cruises. I know some of our listeners are going to be familiar with Dr. Lauren Olson, author of Coming Out After 50 and latest book, No More Neckties. He's a psychiatrist, retired now, but he's one of the profound researchers and speakers on the LGBT community. And we went to one of the LGBT organizations in Barcelona. And while, you know, the group, we could communicate with one another okay. There was a couple of translators. But what we learned in that presentation, that hour and a half, that sense of community, is we're all kind of facing the same issues and questions about life, longevity, safety, love, care, and commitment. And I think as I look back on that, and that's one of the reasons why I've been wanting to do this Aging Gayfully brand, because I want to age gayfully. I don't want to have my later years in life as restricted as my early adulthood years were, where you were trying to figure out your place in life, you know, why my likes and dislikes seem to be different than, you know, the norm. Well, you know, what is the norm? But when you're living your heart's intent, that's when you really age gayfully. And I think there's so many of us out there not living our heart's content and doing the mental gymnastics about what society says you should be rather than what your heart is telling you. You know, that's the message we want to be able to give to people. You know, follow your heart. You know, because one of the things I learned in the seminary, you know, I could go through all the different philosophy and theology classes, which I definitely loved. But I also learned that, you know, the spirit dwells in your heart. Your heart's going to tell you whether or not what's right or wrong, not your mind. And if you can learn to turn off all the noise that other people are saying about how you should be and pay attention to your heart, then you can go to these groups in different cultures that are facing some of the similar issues. You recognize then that, you know what, we're really not all that much different.
Yeah, I think that the concept of normal probably has done the most damage of any other concept that's ever been constructed by humanity. There is no normal. There are commonalities, and I think society creating the idea of a norm is us attempting to build consensus, but it's forcing consensus. It's not building consensus. And it's not taking advantage of the fact that we have certain universal needs, the need to feel safe, the need to feel physically safe, emotionally safe, the need to, you know, be protected, the need to connect with people. All of these things are things that we should be unifying over. But it's probably a lot easier to say, okay, well, you need to cut your hair short, you need to wear long pants and a nice tie, and you need to act in these certain prescribed ways.
We all have baggage from our upbringings. How do you work through that baggage? You know, one of my baggages was, you got to get up early and go to work and work real hard, and then you got to get, you know, you got to have this routine, and it's got to, you know, it's 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's like, no, wait a minute. I never fit that description that my father tried to drill into me. I've been kind of a free spirit most of my life. Some of the most unhappy times in my life has been when I'm, and this is all in retrospect, is feeling like I had to do something just because I had to do something.
Yeah.
Like work that 8 to 5 job. And when I look back on my career and the things that I've done, and I've, you know, I like to say that I've had a cornucopia of life, from professional bowling to being in the seminary. And when was I most happy is when I was able to be that freelancer and dedicate that time to what, you know, to a cause or a profession that I could take ownership of. And not that I didn't take ownership of the jobs that I was in working for somebody else, but there was always that tinge of having to do something that you didn't really want to do.
I'm laughing because I could not identify with this any more than I do.
And this is where the parallel with my mom comes in. 2 college degrees in the 30s, and then became, and I say this then became a baby factory, like a lot of women did in that era, especially a lot of the Catholic women.
Yeah.
Never had an opportunity to follow her dreams and go to Europe. You know, and I look back as I see all these opportunities for nomads where you can go out and freelance and just travel the world. And it's like, where was that 20 years ago?
Right.
But you know what? I can still be a 66-year-old nomad. And that's going to be one of the spirits of aging gayfully as we move forward is, you know, live your life, create a life that you love. Nobody's going to create it for you. Yeah, but you have to step into your comfort zone. And that's what I'm attempting to do with Aging Gayfully. And this is all kind of all happening because this is something it's been on the plate for a few years. But then somebody by the name of Josh Wilson appeared on the scene.
Just wandering around.
And why not give this a shot and see where it goes? Aging gayfully, aging happily, aging in peace. It's almost like it's a justice issue. You know, the play on words here is, well, I identify as a gay person. You know, that word gay these days, why is that so offensive to so many people? Well, a certain segment of people.
Yeah.
You know, the word gay meant something different in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. In fact, one of my favorite songs right now is Diana Krall and Michael Bublé. They're doing a duet. And, you know, it's a ballad about being left at the altar. Michael Bublé's part in this is, and this song was probably, I think it was probably written in the 40s or 50s, but, and he said, I was so gay, you know, feeling good and I was so gay. Well, you know what? I want to feel good. I want to feel gay. I want to live the rest of my life in peace and happiness. And I don't want to be, I think that's what everybody wants to live.
You know, I swear to you, Chris, I thought you were going to bring up the Flintstones theme song.
Now there's another one.
Yeah, we'll have a gay old time. That's how they
ended. We'll have a gay old time.
I mean, come on now. I mean, I always did have my suspicions about Fred and Barney, but I'm imagining in the Stone Ages, imagine, you know, it was even more difficult to be who you were. I think that if we could communicate no other message, it's not a cliche to say that every day can be a new beginning. Every day.
And bringing this back to Spain and culture and Barcelona and the Spaniards, you know, here's where my dyslexia kind of gets things mixed up. I said, do we work to live or live to work?
But most European countries are different than we are, right? This is uniquely an American thing.
Right. I've been very fortunate to travel to Barcelona and Madrid, two of the major cities. I haven't been to Valencia yet, but I've been to some of the smaller cities like Cadiz and Malaga and many others that Ronda. Oh my God, Ronda is like, oh my God, beautiful. And one thing that's common is they have these plazas where the community gathers. You know, they do take their siesta in the middle of the afternoon, but at night, the community is vibrant.
Yeah,
there's people out gathering, being together. I think that's some of the spirit that we want to be able to demonstrate as we move forward with aging gayfully is the spirit that the Spaniards bring to community. You know, they have their political issues like we do, but the community, the togetherness, when you see people talking amongst themselves, walking back and forth in the tapas bars where they're sharing such a romantic experience with food and drink and community. The other major component of this is the safety that you feel.
Yeah.
Of getting on public transportation and knowing that you can pretty much go anywhere or walk anywhere at night and feel safe.
Whether you are gay or not, that's not a thing that you feel cities in the United States.
So you can get to anywhere in Barcelona on the metro. You don't need a car unless you're living out in the burbs. But I wouldn't want to live in the burbs. Why would I want to do that? Yeah. I want to age gayfully right in the center where I can walk to the grocery store. I can walk to the bus line. I can get to the train station and go to, I can be in Madrid in a couple of hours, or I can be in the southern part of Spain in 4 or 5 hours. Or you know what? I can hop on a plane and go over to Paris for $100 in 2 hours.
I'm curious though. So you're talking about this spirit of community and a spirit of welcome. I work with seniors and have done for the past 8 years. I don't know, do they have in their accommodations built into the fabric of their society something like we have here, like ADA compliance, where they need to make facilities welcoming to seniors?
Yes, they do. It's not on the same scale. Mm-hmm. And that's because for them, it's a given.
They don't have to have it mandated, is what you're saying.
It's a given.
That's amazing.
And that's another cultural difference. You know, in the United States, aging is a big business. The spirit of the Spaniards and in Europe in general, many of the Asian communities also have this mindset that, you know, you take care of your own. You know, you have generations living together. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why another reason why I just feel so comfortable there. You see that spirit. You see grandma and grandpa, and you see the parents, and then you see the kids. You know, it's a family unit. You know, that spirit of community lives on. You know, caregiving to them it's a part of the culture to take care of their own, their mm-hmm. family, mm-hmm. and be there with one another. And I think we get so caught up in that in work here that we forget that family is family.
Here's a quick travel tip. If you find yourself in Spain, which I hope you do, here are some phrases that might be helpful. First, tengo té. Repeat after me, tengo té. What's that mean? It means I have tea, meaning I got some gossip to share with you as we sip our tea together. All right, how about this one? Me voló la peluca. Repeat after me. Me voló la peluca. What does that mean? It means that you're surprised in a pleasant way. And it literally means, my wig flew off. I like that one. All right, how about this next one? Y la que soporte. Repeat after me. Y la que soporte. And that basically means it's true whether you like it or not. Lastly, there's this one. No me bufes. Again, repeat after me. No me bufes. That means don't shade me. Don't talk bad about me. Don't call me out. So there are your helpful Spanish phrases. I hope you get to use them soon. The title of this episode is Love in Barcelona, and we chose that very specifically. Now, what you've just described is a culture that seems steeped in love, but how does this phrase love in Barcelona particularly resonate with your story?
It's very personal, but I think it's important to be able to talk openly about life and how I got to this process of aging gayfully. And while I'm very grateful to have a Pulitzer Prize-nominated caregiving story about my life, our life together with my now-deceased partner, Richard Schiffer, you know, that story about loss and where to find yourself after loss, you know, it's quite a bit of entanglement, you know, and I'm not saying that my story is any different than anybody else, because everybody loses somebody that they love and care about. But how do you find that path afterwards, after you lose the love of your life? Where do you find your purpose? You know, like for caregivers, especially if it's a spousal or a partner caregiver, you know, it's like losing two relationships in one, that pre-established relationship that was already there, and then that caregiving relationship, which takes relationships to the next level. All of a sudden, in one day, it's over. And you know, we mentioned earlier about isolation, and you know, it's very prevalent. And my life after caregiving journey has had its ups and downs, personally, professionally, financially. You know, finding that comfort zone. And I was asked often, "Do you think you'll ever fall in love again?" And my response always was, I certainly hope so, but I know it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us fall into that trap, is that we look for something or someone that reminds us of what we once had. How can I replace this? I'm sure there's somebody similar.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? There's nobody similar, and you can't change. You can't change. Not only can a caregiver change somebody else's destiny, you really can't recreate what you had. And the internet is a wonderful thing, and you get to meet people from all over the world. And there was a wonderful person, a wonderful gentleman in Spain that I met online, and we communicated two or three times a week. You know, I was using Google Translate, I will admit, but he captured my attention. And of course, you know, all these internet relationships, you know, you're ever going to meet somebody. Well, you know, I ended up meeting this person. We had a, you know, wonderful couple of days together, and we still communicate. But I remember him vividly walking in the hotel I was staying at to meet for the first time. And I walked in, and he stood there at the stairs, and I looked at him, and we just had this unbelievable big smile that came upon us. And what I learned in that experience of those couple of days and subsequently, you know, in communicating. And you can love again and you can be loved again. And it doesn't take away one thing from what you had. It's just different. Mm-hmm. And in the grieving process, everybody grieves differently. And I'm certainly a proponent of grief becomes burdensome to reach out for help. And I've done that before. But it was that time in my, it was this experience in my life in 2019. And that's now almost 6 years since Richard had passed, that I recognized for the first time that, you know what, I can be loved again. I can love again. I can pursue another relationship without the mental gymnastics that we do at times of impacting what we once had, because you can never replicate what you once had, nor loving again takes away anything from what you had before.
Yeah.
It doesn't diminish what you had. It honors it. But you have to get to that point to where you're comfortable with it. And for me, it took a few years for that to happen. And now, while that person wasn't as much interested in me as I was in him, he helped form a path for me to step into my comfort zone and know that I could be loved again and love freely again.
Well, my new friends, that's the first episode of Aging Gayfully. Thanks for joining us.
We encourage all of our listeners to subscribe to Aging Gayfully on your favorite podcast channels.
And also check us out on social media, Aging Gayfully, and at aginggayfully.com. And so that's Chris, I'm Josh, and together we hope that you go into this day, into this week, into the rest of your life, aging gayfully.